Okay, hello everybody. My name is Laurel. I'm a marijuana addict. So I will follow the what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now format. And I'm really glad to be here. This is my first MA phone meeting. So here we go. Well, let's start from when I was a kid. I was an anxious kid. I was controlling. I was a perfectionist. High achieving. I really put a lot of pressure on myself. And I think I had some disordered behaviors from a young age. I was a very disciplined, goody-two-shoes. And I didn't do anything that I thought was risky or, you know, would jeopardize my academics or anything until the summer after my senior year of high school. And, you know, then I thought, well, you know, I just finished up as valedictorian, so why not try to, like, loosen up a little bit? So I tried drinking and drank a lot, and tried smoking a little pot. And both of those things were sort of revolutionary for me because suddenly I felt like I belonged with a group of friends, and I felt like I could loosen up. I could laugh. People, you know, seemed to like me more. I wasn't as self-conscious about my appearance or how I sounded to other people or anything. It just helped me feel like I was fitting in. You know, especially with weed, I felt that just as soon as I took a puff, it would like instantly evaporate my anxiety. And I knew I had a powerful tool there to help me cope with my anxiety, which had been debilitating for me. I was still putting a lot of pressure on myself. I moved to the Bay Area to attend a university, and I still had really high ambitions. I knew that I had these tools that I could use to make myself feel better, and I started using marijuana fairly quickly. It was my anti-anxiety drug and also a way to control my stress. In college, obviously, you have a lot of stressors, and a lot of them are totally new. I used it to be creative and to enhance my performance in certain classes like art and music, and I felt like it helped me perform and to write well, and thought it was a really good thing for me at first, and it was like a medication that would like instantly help me get better. When I wasn't using it, I went back to this more painful existence with more struggles. It wasn't perfect, but it was helping me in a way, and it was fun. And it might have been the first time in my life that I felt like I was having fun with other people. But as you know, time went on, I realized that I was relying on it more, and I started to notice that my anxiety was getting worse, and I was starting to get some depression. And I started to, you know, realize I was experiencing some more serious difficulties, and I went to get some help from the university health services, and I started doing therapy and like psychiatry services, and those things were helping. I also started to notice that I was relying on weed and alcohol more heavily than I was, you know, comfortable with, and I joined a harm reduction group, which was a therapy group at the health center, which really did help a lot. Through that group, I, you know, started expressing my feelings about my life and my struggles with weed. And we were told that we should put in place strategies that, you know, we should use less or only use in situations that weren't as harmful as what we were currently doing. And I was trying to reduce harm by lowering the amounts that I was taking and only using during certain times of the day. Like, for example, I tried to smoke after school instead of before attending a class or teaching a class. I can't believe I was trying to smoke and, you know, teach a class. But I was. I kept going to that harm reduction group and, like, basically failing to stick to my goals. You know, when that kept happening, I basically knew for sure that I was starting to lose control of when I would smoke marijuana and that I was probably an addict. And, you know, I went to that group for a while. I thought it was really good. And I graduated and I continued to do very well, at least on the surface. Much later, I learned that 12-step programs say that high-functioning addicts, you know, live under the fantasy of functionality, and that fully describes where I was at. I was looking really good on paper. I was high-achieving, and everybody thought I was doing great, or so I thought. I continued that fantasy for years after that, but, you know, I was really struggling inside, and I already knew I probably had addiction, and I knew that I had some sort of mood disorder, probably depression, and there were other things in my life that were really stressful. And it was difficult at that time in my life, but I did stick to the more traditional medical interventions, and they were sort of working for me. But I couldn't imagine my life without drinking and smoking weed. And part of that was just because I built my whole social network around that stuff. And we would throw parties, and that's what we'd be doing at the parties. I was hanging out with people who were older than me and wanted to impress people and that kind of stuff. And, stuff that I was trying to do as a kid, I was still trying to do as a young adult. And it was around that time when I started to really become addicted to weed with daily use and really become depressed. I think that long-term weed smoking and mood issues went hand in hand for me. The chronic pot use really exacerbated my depression. And I tried the medical intervention route again, went back to the psychiatrist, and we got some antidepressants on board, plus, you know, one-on-one therapy. And not sure if this is a common thing, but sometimes when a patient exhibits depression and you give them certain antidepressants, the medication can like bump them up into a hypomanic or a manic state. And that happened to me. And that's how I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So the marijuana use was just always there and it was getting worse. I had some stressors in my life, and I experienced some like scary moments where I was like in rage. I had like an accident where I hurt myself, and it wasn't intentional, but it was really like uncharacteristic of me. And I just felt things were really like out of control. At the time, I was on like all sorts of medications, and it helped me quite a bit, and I didn't have to go to the hospital, and I, you know, didn't have, like, super serious consequences from it, which was good. You know, there are a lot of problems with marijuana use and medications, but one is, like, compliance. And I saw that when I would smoke or drink, but mainly smoke, I'd forget to take my pills, and maybe the effectiveness of the pills was also reduced because I was doing those things. So that was pretty problematic for me. I had some like stomach issues and side effects that I thought were from the pills. So I would use marijuana to make those side effects better. It was like a kind of a weird situation where the meds were on board, but I don't think that they were as effective as they could have been. like, even if you miss a dose once or twice a week, that's like a big deal. And I hear that the meds don't work as well if you drink or smoke while taking them. So anyway, at that point, like, I was having serious problems with memory, with like my cognitive function. And I was having a really hard time communicating with others. Like, I wouldn't know what to say. Couldn't express myself. Like, a lot of the times I was just quiet. And I was, like, hanging out with these really smart people. And I felt like I couldn't keep up. I couldn't learn. And I couldn't remember stuff. And I thought everybody else could. And I felt like I was disabled in a way. And I knew it was the weed. I checked into an outpatient rehab and I didn't take it seriously at all. Obviously I went because I knew I had a big problem and it was scaring me. But they asked me to quit all substances and I didn't stop drinking alcohol and I didn't think that was necessary. So, there was like some disconnect there. I wanted to abstain from all substances, but I couldn't. And that was like further evidence that I had a problem. It had to get to a point where I was like really messing up my life before I could actually do something and really want to do it and then commit. So that wasn't quite at that point for me yet. So let's see, after that, some really awful things happened in my life that were like very traumatic, but I got through them. The thing is, like, smoking pot really prevented me from feeling my emotions and accessing those things like grief and happiness and everything. I wasn't able to express the full range of human emotions, and honestly, that's how I wanted it. It was too painful for me to get through the day without tamping down those emotions with weed. But what that meant is I sacrificed emotions like love, and it just kind of cuts everything down to a narrow range of feeling. I thought I was okay and happy, but I really wasn't. It wasn't a human existence. It was limited. You know, at that point, I tried to keep going. I got a job that I was pretty happy with, but the weed use just kept getting worse. And it was a huge source of anxiety for me. I was doing things to get the weed that I never thought I would have done, like crazy things. And it was like really hurting my performance at work and in life. I was like physically getting worse and worse because I didn't have any desire like to go out and go for walks or do anything. Had like a binge eating disorder that, you know, made me gain a lot of weight. So things were like crumbling, you know, physically for me, mentally, cognitively, and I just felt really trapped and there was no way out. You know, they say how, you know, I basically felt spiritually bankrupt and I had like nothing I could really like hold on to, and I had no hope. But, you know, the craziest thing was that even then I looked fine. Besides some of like the physical aspects on the outside, I looked like I was achieving. But my social circle that I had in college, like great people that I felt awesome being with, you know, had shrunk down to two or three people who were all like enabling each other. My world was very small at that point, and I was really unhappy with that. Basically, like, everything I'd had, I'd lost. No. I was still taking medication and seeing a therapist and everything. And then I think one of my therapists suggested that I go to the chemical dependency recovery program at Kaiser. And I was really, really lucky to have access to that rehab program. It was like an outpatient program where I went to several hours of the program after work every day. And there was an intake session at the program where we talked about marijuana, and for me, to a lesser extent, was my alcohol use. The counselor I had talked to had been a marijuana addict, and she said, this stuff is real. Marijuana is, it's a real issue for people. And I remember she said, people get addicted to marijuana at a rate of 9%. And I read since then that if you're like an adolescent, the rate goes up to 17%. And for, people who are daily users, it's up to 50%. So that's pretty serious. Some people can totally use it without a problem in the world, just like some can with alcohol. And then there are just those people who can't. Being someone with bipolar disorder, I thought that weed fit supernaturally and like super normally into my self-medication and my prescribed medication regimen. And I thought this because I could reliably control my moods just by taking a puff or X amount of weed of a certain strain, or maybe take it as an edible or whatever. I thought I could control my moods on it. Whether that was going from a depressed mood to normal, or from going from like normal to hypomanic, I could like kind of choose my own adventure. And I think that was why it was particularly dangerous for me as someone who is very controlling, because it helped me like instantly be able to think that I could control my moods. Whereas with these other meds I was taking, I just like had to take them every day and I couldn't really feel them working. I've talked to some other people who were addicted to marijuana and also had bipolar disorder. And they totally agree with me that that was one of the draws of marijuana. They could control their moods better than if they were not using weed, which is sort of like fascinating and scary at the same time. So anyway, 2017, when I got into this treatment program, is when things started to turn around. In the early days, I was totally defeated. It was at the point where I had surrendered and I wanted to change, but I didn't know how. And at the beginning of the treatment program, they started like giving me information and a sort of framework for how to change. One of the things that they taught me was that addiction is a disease and it's nothing to be ashamed of. And there are certain things you must do to recover and that you can heal from it. And one of those things that was, they pretty much required you to do was to go to outside 12-step program meetings for your drugs of choice. And that's when I learned about Marijuana Anonymous. So not only was I getting over a year of intensive support from Kaiser, but they also showed me this outside community that could help me during and beyond that time that I was in rehab. And MA, at first, mainly gave me a sense of community and the knowledge that other people were struggling with this problem, and that there were people who seemed to be recovered and happy in life. And it gave me, what I was lacking, which was a, tremendous sense of hope that I could do that as well if I followed what they suggested. In the program, we obviously talk about the recommended 12 steps, which I think are really important to go through. There's sort of a transformation in the personality that happens once you've gone through the whole thing. It really cleans up your life and it gives you a fresh start. Working with a sponsor to do those steps and to be supported in my life has been really important to me, as well as sponsoring other people to help them recover. I've always been into mentorship, so that fit really well into my life. And doing things like that really improved my self-esteem. So that's very important. There's, you know, plenty of opportunities for service within each meeting, and that's making sure each meeting happens. At a higher level in the organization, the district level, you can also have service positions there to maintain the function of the organization. I just tried to get involved as much as possible. And, you know, I want to circle back and talk about service a little bit later. But, you know, at first I knew it was going to take like several months to a year to start feeling better. Because I was being active and I started, you know, imposing like structure on my life, I did begin feeling better. It was like doing something about my problem. I was like taking action. And I would say that my brain still felt very foggy. And it was just like this continuation of the cognitive problems that I was having with processing and working memory. And that started to get a little bit better at 6 months. And I think maybe by a year and a half, I felt almost fully better. And that was huge for me because that was one of my biggest concerns. You know, I've been basically scared that I was just losing my mind and that my capacity to think and just like have a healthy brain. And now I'm just feeling totally recovered. So I think there's a huge capacity for the brain to heal from addiction. So it's really amazing. In terms of mood, I had to work with my psychiatrist on the medication situation, like what meds to take and what doses. And soon I became like fully compliant, taking my meds exactly as prescribed because I knew how important that was. It was kind of weird. I'm not sure if this happened when I quit using marijuana or if this was how it was happening toward the end of my using, but my bipolar exhibited a yearly cycle where in the late summer, fall, and early winter, I had a really like obviously elevated mood. Like I was cleaning the house, making sure everything was tidy and like, things I wouldn't normally do, being more active. And then starting midwinter, I would like crash and get depressed. So there was like something going on there that my meds were not able to address. They were effective, but they were not like fully effective because of the weed and alcohol use. But since I became compliant with the medications and the substances went away and I had like really improved my life, I basically had like one more moody cycle that year, and then the cycling basically stopped, and I have no symptoms. I take my meds religiously now, and I have no symptoms of bipolar disorder. I'm not sure how common that is, but I was even able to wean off of a heavy-duty mood stabilizer and reduce the amount of another mood stabilizer. So, yay! Now, what about that anxiety that I've been dealing with my whole life? It was pretty obvious to me toward the end that weed didn't help with anxiety anymore. So it would only heighten my anxiety and paranoia and my worrying. I still struggled with heavy anxiety for a while after quitting. And I had an abrupt change in my whole life and had to learn new ways to deal with anxiety without weed. But the anxiety gradually improved, and I'm not sure I could put a time on it in terms of like a number of months, but definitely as I started gaining confidence and my life started to get put back together, I didn't have as many things to worry about, like getting weed all the time, and all my worries just lessened gradually. One of the interesting things I've noticed is my resilience is very strong. I've been able to cope very well with pretty difficult things that have popped up in my life. Just do what I have to do, guided by advice from the program and my therapist, and I can get through it. I use my program to help me cope. It's been really interesting to me to see how I can deal with things now, because I thought things are still going to happen in my life and they're still going to be really hard and it's just going to be like it used to be, but no, it just isn't. I have so many more tools to deal with things now, but to be honest with you, like I still have an anxiety disorder and am to this day trying to work with my doctor to find the right tools to help me. The program is a huge help. When I have like racing thoughts, I say the Serenity Prayer over and over. I remember that I need to let go and let God take over. And time again, my anxiety is proven wrong, and I get through that meeting with my boss or that presentation just fine. You know, I'm not a perfect person, and I never will be. It's, progress, not perfection. I need to practice letting go over and over again. This is the area of my life that I feel like, you know, call on my higher power the most, help me do my higher power's will, not mine, and let things happen as they will instead of how I think I want them to happen. It's accepting a loss of my sense of control over my life and others' lives. And one way I feel like God can act through me is when I help others. And this is carrying the message and doing acts of service, which is step 12. And, I want to talk about the importance of service. And in the Life with Hope book, it says the more we help others, the more we help ourselves. So it's a little bit of a selfish message, but there are many ways that we can be of service, and it could be as simple as sharing at a meeting, raising your hand and sharing for a couple minutes. You can share at a meeting, doing like what I'm doing tonight, and there might be something that you hear that resonates. You can speak to a fellow MA member. You can help them get through a tough time. That's really important. You can simply show up at a meeting. That's being of service. Or you can take up a service position. There are many service positions that are really important to the function of a meeting. Like in an in-person meeting, you can like help set up and clean up. There's like being a snack person, a greeter, like a chip person, literature person, treasurer, general service representative, or GSR, and the person like goes to the district meetings and passes messages back and forth between the district level and the meeting level. And there's of course like secretary position. Like for online meetings, there's secretary, like tech host, timer. For some meetings, there's a bouncer and speaker seeker and treasurer and GSR. And I mean, there's just so many ways that you can be of help. And Like, I just jumped in, and like, as soon as I felt like I could, I was of service, and that's really helped me stay sober. Like, district level service committee has been really wonderful, like getting to know other people, making friends. It just feels really good and keeps me accountable. There's also, world service level, Marijuana Anonymous world service level. There's just so much that one can do to help. I think it's great because you can apply your skills to help our organization thrive. And you can learn new skills if you just dive in. Somebody will teach you. That's, called service sponsorship. And, talking about sponsorship, sponsorship is, way to share personal experiences and get emotional support, guide someone through the 12 steps. It's been, really important in my journey through the program and many others. It keeps someone accountable, keeps people sober. Sponsor is, symbolizes a life free from marijuana addiction and acts as a role model. We have some really great resources for sponsorship. We have the Life with Hope book and especially the workbook. They're fantastic guides through the 12 steps. If you're not sure whether you're ready to commit to being a sponsor, you can agree to doing a temporary sponsorship, which is like a trial run. Take someone through, a couple steps and, just agree to help them out and talk to them. For someone who's looking for a sponsor, how do you find a sponsor? Well, definitely attend meetings and the post-meeting parking lot. Speak up. Listen for the similarities in your story and other people's story and find someone who you resonate with. Just raise your hand and share that you need a sponsor. Someone might contact you and say, "Hey, I'm willing to talk with you. Here's my number." Go ahead and contact people who raise their hand and say that they're willing to be a sponsor. Those are a couple ways to get yourself out there. Couple things to consider with sponsorship. Consider the gender of your sponsor. It's definitely an individual thing. Sponsorship should, the relationship should center on recovery and remain platonic, regardless of the person's gender. Make sure that you set clear expectations about communication frequency and how you like to communicate, like phone and text, in person, and response times. You want to have, a good communication between you and your sponsor. And it's great if you can go to the same meeting as your sponsor, so that you can see them regularly. And hear the same message. I used to meet to do step work with my sponsee a couple hours before we went to the same meeting. Unfortunately, I'm currently full and not accepting applications right now. But really, this program is full of miracles. I have really experienced so many positive things from being in this program. Today, I am a completely changed person from where I was 6, 7 years ago. And I really owe it all to this program. So you know, thank you so much for having me tonight. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.